Tara Mahadevan.
What's good? How's it going?
Tara, you...
Why are you looking at me like that? Like I'm crazy.
I know, I just...
I know
I'm making
I look
sure.
like a pirate today, but...
Do you know?
I don't know. I felt a little bit. I think it's the red bandana.
Yeah.
I feel like bandanas are usually like pretty...
But
like,
normally I don't feel like a pirate when I wear one. Just today.
Like if you wear a bandana one day, you probably wear them every day of the week though, no?
Oh, I'm wearing it because my hair is dirty.
Oh, okay. It's
going to be real.
Special occasion.
Yeah, gotcha. Special occasion bandana.
Well, it is nice to see you as always. Bandana or not.
Yes.
We have the homie in the house, an incredible musician. Music composer, somebody who's worked with so many people, I and someone who I care deeply about, also someone who can sing and rhyme for real, a beautiful artist, Nico Segal is in the corner store.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, man.
Woo.
Yo,
so
welcome.
Awesome
welcome.
To be here. Yeah.
Yo, thank you for being here.
Thank you. So good to see you.
And welcome back to Chicago now for a little while, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You're...
No, it's been a little while, but I'm still getting used to everything. Thank you so much.
DJ Cashera, our super producer, has brought Nico some coffee, which is really kind.
Woo!
Yeah.
And very
Where's
necessary.
My coffee?
Yeah. Wait, Cashera. Wait, you're in here so infrequently. Do you mind saying hello to all the people?
Hello to all the people.
DJ Cashera's voice is amazing. How do we get Cashera?
She kind of has like a sultry radio voice.
I know. Cashera, we need you on the radio on our show more. How's that possible?
Yeah.
We can make it happen. I can actually talk to you from my studio.
Well, you never do. Why?
But we did that one episode at the end of the year.
I love
that. Was fun.
I love that.
Because you guys are always talking to the guests, asking them questions. So I do.
We could ask you questions.
That's our job.
Yeah, you can ask me questions.
We should interview her.
I can ask you questions.
Boom. Did you want to ask me questions?
I do. I'm curious.
This is an impromptu interview.
I know. How'd you come to work in this place? How did that opportunity present itself for you?
I graduated from Columbia in 2017, and Kevin Koval introduced me to the proper people.
Kevin Koval, great guy.
Yeah, he really is a great guy.
You know.
Yeah, listen, have you? Yeah,
I heard he runs these streets, but I'm not sure.
Listen, yeah, have you seen the shoe game? He definitely runs these streets.
You're going to meet yourself?
I'm gonna.
But let's not give away too much, because then you know we got
right. I don't want to give away too much, right. But yeah, just know that I graduated and then started working.
But let's do the Cashera interview.
No, I'm dead ass.
Yeah, for real. We can
let's do
that soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm here every week, guys. Just let me know.
She's like, I've been waiting.
She's here like all
She's like,
the time.
Why the fuck is this new information, and why have I not been on the show sooner? Also, Cashera's mom's in the building. Hello,
hey.
DJ Cashera's
hey.
Mom. Also, looks like her sister.
Right.
Yeah, but you know. Nico,
Kevin.
Thank you for
back to Nico. You know, the person we're supposed to interview.
So
wait, you know?
So you are recently back. Of course, born and raised in Chicago, but you moved back to the greatest city in the world from LA.
The greatest city. I missed all my people and all the food, and I didn't miss this traffic because everybody talked about the traffic in LA being super crazy. But when I moved back home, it was so much worse than wherever I was living in LA. And
really?
It was just so bad. It was just so bad. Made me feel so bad.
Well,
Where were you going? I just feel like LA traffic is so bad, though.
LA traffic, it's bad because everything is super spread out, so everybody has to take the same highways. Nobody takes the streets like in Chicago. If you're on a highway and you're going somewhere and you're like, fuck this traffic, like, I'm out of here, you can get out of there. And you can take streets and maneuver your way.
And that's the key to LA, is just go local.
Well, I'm not saying that because I wasn't there long enough to really learn the streets like that.
Okay.
I don't think that is because
everything
is, like he said, is so spread out. It'll probably take you just like...
I know,
everybody just takes
pleasurable.
The highways, though. Everybody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Every single person.
That's what, when I'm there, I go local and I'm...
And you're decent?
I'm decent.
Maybe that was the key.
I also like looking at graffiti, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, but...
I always love taking streets. It's always better.
But I know that you are from North...
I am from super far north, as far north as you can be.
Right. Still living there now? Did you move back?
Nope. Okay. I bought a house.
Wow.
Oh, shit.
I'm a homeowner.
Salutes, man.
Wow. Congrats.
I own a house now.
That's great.
It's in Humboldt Park.
Congrats.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Welcome to the neighborhood. That's where I live.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome.
Yo, holler at me if you need some sugar or like...
But like
salt or something.
Right.
Tara's
exactly.
gonna bring over like a cake.
An
or
egg.
Like that.
I would bring you
some
one
flour.
Egg,
right? I got you.
In the neighborhood.
I'll bring you all the elements of the cake, and you have to make it yourself.
Okay, perfect.
I'm not gonna give you the cake.
That's kind of right. Because you could teach a man to bake.
I mean, I'm gonna leave
and then
him.
We can eat it together.
Exactly.
Man, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So wait. So of course, you know, I want to talk about the move back.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, famously, you are and have been part of the social experiment, the Juju Exchange. You have a new project that I want to talk about coming out with Nate Fox. But also to go all the way back, you are a student of Chicago and Chicago music.
For sure.
And have been educated in the city's confines. Talk about just your early musical development.
Man, that's a great question. I learned a lot from a lot of different people. I had a lot of different teachers in the jazz world, classical world, in the trumpet learning world. I also had teachers that didn't play trumpet and just taught me music, you know, theory and talking about learning songs. And then I also had a lot of teachers that were somewhat my peers, but were very wise beyond their years. And I'm talking about the Oh My's specifically in this case.
Yeah.
For me, playing with the Oh My's was my first step into playing quote unquote professionally.
And how did you meet those guys?
My dad is a teacher in CPS, has been a teacher in CPS my whole life, and taught Marcel. And Marcel used to babysit me and shit. And he's from super far north too, and he's like the only person that's from all the way up north where I'm from,
right? North Pole,
like super, like damn near Evanston north, right.
What's before Evanston?
Rogers Park.
Okay, that's so, what I thought.
Yeah,
so that's where we're both from, and we would always spend New Year's together, and you know, our families were close because we lived by each other.
Am I mistaken, your dad teaches Latin jazz or plays Latin jazz?
He does a lot of different things outside of his actual job description most of the time. He's done chess clubs. He's done Latin jazz programs. And they're all, like, after school and, you know, just on his time. And Maceo and I were actually both in the chess club, too. And
who was better?
I can't go into that. That's not fair.
But oh, so that means he's you were better. I don't know.
That's not fair. We grew up together. We started taking conga lessons together from this dude, Jose, who was amazing. And Marcel was way better at it because his hands were like way bigger than mine when I was like super little, and he could just like cup the drum better and get a way better sound. I was always envious of that. And anyways, he was super into music, you know, producing wise and singing and doing a bunch of things. And actually one of the first times he sang in public was during one of my dad's plays. My dad used to do these plays like musicals almost to teach different curriculum, and he had to like sing this love song to this girl he really didn't like, and it was like this public, oh my gosh, this guy is like the greatest singer ever moment for everybody. And he was in like sixth grade or something, you know?
Yeah.
And anyways, they started the Oh My's, and I started playing with them. And I just learned so much from actually, you know, being in a band and being like in front of people playing music, whether that was at a club like Subterranean or it was at a bar like Lily's, you know, like, or it was on the street, you know, busking for whatever, you know, like, I just think those two guys are total geniuses and amazing people. And, my big bros, for real, they taught me so much about being in the business and playing shows and rocking out and having fun, you know?
Yeah, no, we love those guys, and they're Cornerstore alum. Did you go to high school,
No, so it was grade school I went to with Marcel.
Right, okay. Yeah. Parker or no, is that?
No, he went to
high school.
He ended up going to Parker. I went to Whitney.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at Whitney Young.
Okay. And you know, we met in high school.
Yeah.
And you were hitting open mics and, you know, both with your trumpet, but also as a lyricist, as a poet and as someone who also, you know, rhymed, and of course we're in a crew with No Name and Malcolm, which is a really dope crew called Dat Scat. you know, based off of a Roots record, I think, if I remember. And I loved that group, and I thought y'all had, like, hits for real.
Yeah, I feel you.
Right? So
we had hella fun is what we had.
Yeah, you guys were dope, though.
We taught each other a lot, I feel like.
Yeah?
You know, in just, like, our processes of writing and, like, well, I guess we really just learned a lot from Fatima because she's a, you know, like, total genius.
Yeah.
And totally brilliant. And, you know, but also it was just great tests for us. Like, we would go to the same place every day at the Music Garage and, you know, early. And we would write all day. We would just, like, write. See, and a lot of the time, you know, who was faster? Like, who got their verse done quicker? Who could outsmart the other one? You know, who had a line worth repeating, you know? And I think that type of friendly competitiveness, but that's also like, all, you know, we're all aiming for the same goal, you know? That's really what pushes you and makes you better, you know?
Well, your high school, I mean, is interesting because you're in a band that is really beginning to make some noise in high school, right? You're a part of mm-hmm. kids these days.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, that is in a lot of ways, that band helped to create a moment for so many musicians
mm-hmm.
In the city, and then broke up before you guys got, you know, maybe more notoriety, even though
mm-hmm. but you were signed.
Whoa, so much information being thrown around. Yeah, for like a week.
Oh, really?
But yeah, we did sign some paperwork at one point in our career, right at the end.
Yeah, right.
At the
end. Right.
And
you worked with homie from Wilco.
Jeff Tweedy. That was an amazing experience. That was super, super important. He was like showing us so many interesting ways of recording things, and we, you know, that was the first time we got to like put a drum in an elevator or something, you know, like get really creative with how we are getting sounds. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of that, you know, just taught us how to make things important, because when you play an instrument, you know, after you first learn how to like just play through your scales or something, you know, get some sort of facility on your instrument, that's all you want to do is just like blah, 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 you know, just like get it all out there, show everybody what you can do. And it's harder to really dedicate yourself to what it sounds like and be honest about what it sounds like and get creative about what it sounds like and try and new things and see what it, you know, you never know what could happen, you know. That's what's exciting about making music, really.
And you've had a hand, I mean, it, just to talk about your own trajectory from, you know, from the kids to what happened afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a hand in so much of a Chicago sound in mm-hmm. a lot of ways, as not only an instrumentalist, but as someone who's been in the room helping to compose and craft mm-hmm. These records. So the kids must have been a pretty spectacular experience,
young. Oh, of course. I mean, I didn't go to college. I went to Kids These Days. You know what I mean? Like, we were touring colleges when we were supposed to be in college. That was our college experience, you know? And we all learned a lot together, especially about just working with other people and trying to find a common goal when everybody is trying to also find themselves musically and trying to explore other avenues and trying to get better at the thing that they think they're supposed to be really good at. Do you know what I mean? Like the thing that they're supposed to dedicate themselves to. Because even in Kids These Days, you know, we were all experimenting with a lot of other things. Like you said, I was writing and doing my own poetry thing, and I was really still into jazz music, and I was still playing a lot of jazz music, and I felt like I was getting to explore all those things within Kids These Days, and other people felt like they had to go elsewhere to explore those things mm-hmm. to really figure out what it meant for them, you know? And yeah, that's all it really was. It's just like conflicting ideas on how to get to where they're meant to be, kind of, you know?
That must have been hard when y'all split.
It was, man, but so much was happening at the same time. Like, we were playing some really big festivals and some really big shows, and somewhere along the line, you know, our names got mentioned to go to this audition to play for Frank Ocean, and we went in between playing Coachella, in between those two weekend dates during the week, we went and auditioned. That was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. I felt like I was auditioning for like the symphony orchestra or something, but I was getting to play fucking Frank Ocean music, you know? It was incredible. And I fucking got it.
Right.
And then we went on tour, and that was a completely different tour than Kids These Days touring had been.
I'm sure.
And it was really jarring in a lot of ways. You know, on Kids These Days, we were like running around the stage and jumping everywhere and like mosh pitting and fucking stage diving. And then with Frank, you know, we're in suits and we're seated on stage the whole time. And it was like straight up orchestra type shit almost. We're still on stage, I guess. And I did have a freaky free jazz inspired solo on Pilot Jones. But either way, it was a very different touring experience. We were in hotels instead of all sneaking into bedrooms together and shit, like sleeping on people's couches. Like,
very composed.
It was very different.
Yeah.
It was like, you more know, mature. One of the first days was about like what you could and couldn't wear. You know, and really, like, that seems so crazy when you just hear it like that. But when you go on tour with somebody else and it's just their name, it's just them out there. Everything that happens that's attached to that person's name, every person that's attached to that person at any show, it comes off as their.
You represent
what
them.
What mm. they're on.
Yeah.
And he just didn't want people on some goofy shit, really. And it was very simple. It wasn't, like, super crazy. I think one of the craziest things was, like, he really didn't want people to wear hats. Yeah, I hope he doesn't fucking kill me for this. But he really didn't want people to, like, wear hats at all. And he wasn't even on our bus, you know what I mean? And he was, like, making rules about people. And it wasn't like he was going to come over there and, like,
you couldn't wear hats on the bus?
But here's the thing. He wasn't going to come over there and be like, oh, you're wearing that hat. Like, I hate you. But it's like, he wanted you to have to think about that shit, I think.
But what if you're having a bad hair day?
Oh, that's nice.
It was just like, he doesn't want people wearing some goofy hat or like some goofy,
with something on it, that
regular cap.
Yeah.
And it just looks sloppy. It looks like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think
Frank is all about the look.
Right.
A lot about the stage.
It's an aesthetic. Yeah.
The aesthetic is so important to him. And I fucking applaud that, and I think he's a genius for shit like that. And
it's something so simple, I don't even think about it. Not
just like goofy shit written on your shirts and stuff, and like goofy hats, and like, he was just like,
yeah, he wanted a look.
Yeah, and
I appreciate
that. Reflective of him, you know, if you're like wearing something,
and everybody's different.
Yeah,
you know, Chance is like, the next tour I was on was Chance, and he's on stage with a hat every night, jumping up and down, and wants me to have fun too on stage. Not that Frank didn't want me to have fun, but you see what I'm saying?
A different
wants
kind.
Me to show people I'm having fun, wants me to be up there with the trumpet and be explosive like that, you know? And
it's a more shared experience.
It was kind of like, dang, the best of both worlds just like landed in my lap, kind of, you know, where it's like, we're not necessarily struggling for hotels and we're not necessarily in the nicest hotels, but like, we're staying in nice places, we're decent.
Well, at what point did you start going on the road with Chance? Is this Acid Rap?
The first Social Experiment tour.
Okay.
It was 2013, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it 2014?
I think 2013. End of 2013.
And this is...
What was Acid Rap in 20...
But this is Surf? This is...
This
I
is
forget
before
the
surf.
Order. This is before
this
Surf.
Is before Surf.
Okay.
Surf was 2015.
Okay. Okay. And what was... I mean, because you guys were then on the road together for a while.
Yeah, those are some of the craziest tours I've ever been on, for sure.
Why?
The first couple Social Experiment tours.
I'm sure. Why?
Because it's kind of like I was saying, like, it wasn't like Kids These Days. Like, we were way more comfortable, and the shows were Kids These Days shows were fucking insane. But every show was sold out. Every show was, like, stacked to the brim with people going crazy, singing every word. And, you know, we were on a bus for the first time. That was insane. We were all selling merch. Like, it was just like, it was like a real tour. It was like what Frank's tour was, but, you know, just like slightly less fancy.
And with your friends.
And with all my fucking friends.
Yeah.
And I got to play music that I worked on that I had been a part of, and knew half the cast, you know, that was on the album, and then playing with Peter and meeting him and working with him for the first time, and he's incredible, and taught me so much about just music in general and sound and, man, just so much. And that's where I met Nate for the first time on the Social Experiment tour.
Is he not from Chicago?
Nate is the only one not from Chicago. Nate is from Pittsburgh.
Oh, I didn't know that. Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And so who all was a part of that band at that time?
It was me, Peter, Greg, Nate, Chance. That was it at first.
Okay.
Then we had Jeff Giddy playing guitar. At some point, we had Macy on tour with us playing strings and singing. Yeah.
How's Nate brought into the fold?
He produced most of Acid Rap.
Okay.
Worked on the whole thing, produced some of the big songs.
And so take us through that trajectory of that group, because you know, you worked with them, and I don't even know if still do, or if even that group is together in the same way.
The Social Experiment?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
So from 10 Day to Grammy, how does that happen in such a short period of time?
Man, well, I guess you got to ask Chance about that.
Because you're a Grammy Award winner now, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
I should have
said that in the intro.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Think bye. I know.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Man, we made a ton of music and we learned a lot. And, you know, we met a lot of incredible people like Francis and the Lights. And, man,
And moved. Right.
And we moved to LA. We were working out there.
I remember that Fader story. I thought that was so, I don't know, that was a great story. I was like, I want to write something like this. That shit was great.
Yeah, I did a whole show called Farewell Downy Trumpet.
Which was
where I wasn't playing any Downy Trumpet music at all. I was playing only music I had written, and I was singing that night as well. Some of the songs. Marcel was there too.
Where was that?
That was at a club on, it was like
on
South Loop.
Michigan, yeah. That was a great show.
Yeah.
And you could sing for real.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was like one of my first shows ever. It might have been the first show I ever had like singing in front of people. And we went to LA, worked in hella different studios, what they call working studios out there that are like big ass fancy buildings with super fancy gear and a bunch of assistants going to get you stuff and charging you a lot of money. And they're great. And
you guys built a studio?
And then we built our own working studio kind of in LA. And that's where we made Intellectual. Nate had another studio that we made a lot of surf at in LA too, above this Indian restaurant. We were there for a while. It was fire.
Right. I'd been.
But they were like super dirty or something because
there
Indian
was
like
restaurant?
Roaches and weird animals around.
It's tough to live above a restaurant. Just
it was
every
tough.
Restaurant will
the
have
studio was tough.
Vermin.
It had no windows. It
oh,
was
no.
just a
yeah.
it was a bleak place. But we did make some good music in there. We had Janelle Monáe and her whole posse in there hanging out with us right before Classic Man came out. It was quite the experience.
Wow. But L.A., how long did you live there?
Like 5 years, 4.5, 5 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was some of the most touring years of my life. I wasn't really anywhere.
Right.
I was on tour way more than I was in L.A. I was in Chicago on a lot of important days still. We were recording a lot in Chicago still. I was kind of all over the place.
How do you remain a person with that much travel? How do you remain kind of feeding yourself? I mean, literally, figuratively, how to remain in relationship to people? Mm. Like, what are some of the things that you do on the road in order to maintain a sense of self?
Man, this is a really tough one because it's not easy. And I kind of wish somebody had told me when I was becoming a musician what it meant to be a musician. Because I hate airports. They give me so much anxiety. I hate being able to go so many different places and then not being able to really see them because you're just in an arena or in a club or wherever, and then you play the show and then you're leaving, you know, immediately. And
it's a job. It's a job. You're not.
It's a job. You're like a doctor. That's how I like to tell. You're just on call. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody calls me and they're like, "Yo, I need you to play trumpet on this tour," I'm like, "All right, let's go." And that doesn't matter when your birthday is, or when your girlfriend's birthday is, or when whoever's birthday it is, or what you had planned. You kind of just got to drop everything and make it happen, because that's ultimately how you get work. Because a lot of the time, you know, the guy that gets the job isn't necessarily eons better than everybody else. You know, they're just like there and on time and like clean and responsible and like easy to get along with. That's like a huge one, you know? Like, Chance would have never asked me to be in his band if I was an asshole, even if he knew I could play the trumpet. And we had been friends for years already, so there was already that relationship. But I'm just using him as an example.
But you still had to show up on time.
But really,
and friendship
aside. Exactly. I mean, we're still traveling the world together. He still has to be comfortable, like, sleeping in a bunk right next to me for 2 months. You know what I mean? Like, for lack of a better word, intimate relationship, being in a band.
Yes, it is.
It is a very intimate relationship. You get very close to people. You rely on people for certain things, you know, just to be there, you know, in your life, I guess, because you start to, you know, kind of depend on that type of relationship, you know, sometimes when you're on tour. It's like, I feel like Nate is like the best on tour. He's like always asking people if they need something, like when he goes to the store. It's just like, it's shit like that, man, that makes you want to work with people. It's like, I feel like it's really like any other job ever, probably. You know, I've never had another job, but it's probably like another job where you show up and you have to be on time and you have to be like nice and professional and easy to work with. Every single person in this place at one point had to prove that they could do that. And it's the same in music, and people think it's not. Mm. And we're all just people, you know, from me, from little old me to Stevie Wonder, we're all just people, and we all have to travel, and we all have to get sick, and we all have to piss and shit like everybody else. Sorry. But
yeah, everyone forgets that, though. You know how, like, glamorous, you know, a musician's life seems. You look at him on social media and shit like that. And
I'm also not complaining, because obviously my story is unique, and I'm super blessed. I've had a lot of opportunities in my life, and, you know, gotten the call a lot of the time, you know, when it couldn't have happened. And I just honestly stay hungry, stay super humble, and, you know that I suck at all the different things that I'm trying to do here and trying to get better at them every day. And
which is one of the things that I think is remarkable about you, is that, you know, I think there are people who stay stagnant or rest on their laurels. And I think for a lot of people, they might be happy being on Frank's tour, or happy being on a Chance record and being on tour. But then you go do a whole other series of projects, which is really interesting, right?
Yeah.
The Juju Exchange is not necessarily the direction of any, you know, pop record.
Right.
You know, it's a brilliant project and a great group.
Yeah, it's really dope.
Right.
Wait, so is it over? Now that
it's
you're
not,
doing something else?
It's okay. Not at all. We have another album in the works.
Nice.
It's just
we're keeping it pushing.
Yeah.
Music is like that. At least for me, you know, I'm not necessarily tied to one way of outputting music. I just feel like if I'm going to do it, I'm going to commit to it. If I'm going to play some jazz music, I'm going to commit to it. If I'm going to try and write a song, I'm gonna commit to it and make an album. You know, if I'm gonna, like, I'm gonna change the whole name. I'm gonna be the Juju Exchange. I'm gonna be Intellectual. I'm gonna be Nico C. I mean, I'm gonna be myself ultimately. But I think, you know, for all these things to come together in different ways, but highlighting different points of emphasis, kind of, is what's exciting to me and what pushes me in all those different things too. How do I get better at this for the juju? How do I get better at this for intellectual?
How does the new project differ from juju?
Well, the juju exchange is mostly about instrumentals, mostly about heavy jazz influence and heavy gospel influence, I'd say. And this album is heavier in folk influences and kind of R&B soul influences, like Labi Safri. That's a person I want to highlight and shout out all the time from Mountaintops. If you don't know who he is, look him up. Labisiffre. And he's been sampled a million times. You'll recognize some of the songs when you hear them. And he's fucking brilliant. And yeah, him and Benny Sings is another one that's super influential for this project. I'd say Prince is super influential for this project. He passed while we were making it. And I just think it was, everybody was listening to him so much. And, you know, with artists like that, you constantly find new music that you hadn't heard before. And yeah, just really digging heavy into his discography and all his sounds.
And this is a project intellectual between you and with you and Nate.
Yep.
Does it feature other musicians? Is it just,
it does. It has other people on it, but the bulk of it is stuff that we wrote and are performing as well.
Okay. And how soon can people hear the record?
April 12th. And actually, there's a song out now. It's like a teaser song. It's like a half song, but it's a song.
Okay.
And the title is just intellectual with just the consonants, INTLXL. And yeah, it's everywhere on iTunes and SoundCloud and all that. It's tight. It's a vibe.
It gets you
into the mood. It gets, you know.
Yeah.
A little appetizer.
And then, is there a plan? Are you guys, you know, doing shows with this record, or you know, what's the plan post April 12th?
Yeah, the plan is to let people listen to it more than anything. I have no idea what's going to happen. I hope something incredible happens that I could have never predicted. The plan is to, you know, release the album. We have some other pieces of content like videos and stuff that we're working on. And we're definitely going to perform it in some capacity. I don't know what that's going to look like yet. But I think it depends, you know, what happens with some of the songs and how people receive them.
Well, it's exciting. I'm excited for the record.
Yeah, me too.
You are, you moved back, though.
I'm back.
Yeah. And so why? I mean, other than the food and your people.
So many reasons.
Yeah. It's good to have. I'm so glad you're back.
Yeah. Thank you. It's so good to be back. For real, I've been so many places on earth, and Chicago is just so much better than everywhere else. It's crazy.
Listen,
I love Chicago to death, and I think it's amazing. And I want to be a part of it getting better. And I also know that there's a lot of work to do. And I feel like knowing how much work there is to do, knowing a lot of the people that are putting in work, I was uncomfortable being away from that work and not being able to be more a part of change happening in the city and seeing so much changing. And shit, I live in Humble Park right now. You know what I mean? Like, my parents lived in Humble Park when I was a baby, and it was a completely different place, you know. And then they moved, and then they moved, and then they found Rogers Park. But yeah, I think that's a big part of it. A big part of it is my family, being away from my family. Like, when you're on tour for hella long and then you get back to a place where you only know or want to hang out with a couple people and you can't, like, see your parents or see your little sister. I have a little sister. So see your family. That was super tough in LA. And, you know, the people, the vibe in LA is special. It is a special place. There is a big place in my heart for LA. It's a very different type of beauty, I think, than Chicago's type of beauty. And I loved being able to experience it, but I was also like, needed some seasons. Needed some like rain and some snow.
I feel that.
That shit was so weird. It was like the Truman Show, you know?
Like
it was
living like, the same day every day.
It's just the same day every day. And it just gets weird. And then sometimes in LA, people don't talk about this about LA either. Sometimes in LA, it'll just rain for a week straight and it'll just be gray. Like in Chicago, it can rain, then the sun will come out, then it'll thunderstorm, then the lightning will happen, then the sun will come back out, like, all in 3 hours. So, like, I don't know. I think that's kind of a metaphor for how I felt about L.A., where it's just, like, felt so stagnant there. Mm. Missed my family, missed the people, missed the food. Yeah. I still fuck with LA though. I love LA.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're music still there
in LA. The music making in LA is very different too, in positive and negative ways. I mean, the amount of studios that they have in LA is insane. And the work that you get because they're just there is also insane. Because they're just there. And people that you like, Pharrell, can just be working up the street, you know, instead of like just your homie that you grew up making music with, which is awesome, but it's like.
Paycheck's
I'm trying to get
different.
That
yeah.
check,
yeah.
And I'm also trying to like make these big time moves, and I feel like LA was like, I needed to satisfy that quench of like going somewhere and like seeing what happened, and at first it was a total shit show for me, and our housing fell through. I don't want to talk too much about it, but we didn't have anywhere to live at first. Anyways, there was a whole bunch of shit that happened when we first moved out there, and. I just had to experience that shit and, you know, get through it and get to some crazy sessions. I remember, like, getting called to go to a session for Kanye, and it was literally, like, 2 minutes from my house. Like, I look up the address because I still don't know, like, anywhere in L.A. I look up the address in Waze or whatever, and it's, like, 2 minutes away. You know, like, that's the type of shit that LA has, really. That's the only thing. It's just like a whole bunch of studios that everybody around the world goes to and works at on a professional level.
What's the food you miss the most when you were there?
Harold's.
Yeah,
I hate to admit it, but
where do you have a particular one you go to?
Not really. I'm not that particular.
Did you read the was this Chicago magazine?
Yeah,
that ranked it.
Yeah,
and then what's his foot re-ranked it. Larry.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm sure
Legend.
Everybody has their favorites.
Yeah,
that shit was kind of bogus though. Like the first time that they their food guy ranked it.
Yeah,
and it, you know,
he gave the
bogus. It was sus.
Yeah,
well, I love food, but that's like a guilty pleasure for any Chicagoan for sure.
Is it guilty though? I just feel like it's not.
It's only guilty when you leave and you realize what you're eating. And then you come back and you're like, ooh, I crave it so bad. You're like, damn.
Did they open one in L.A.? Did I hear that? I don't know.
I think they have one in Atlanta.
I don't know.
Okay, maybe.
And it's like a restaurant.
Okay.
Oh, that's...
Wow.
Or something. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it makes sense, and it makes sense even about the weather in L.A. because you are not someone who wants to be stagnant, right? You are... in a lot of places, intellectually, spiritually, and I think it shows then in the different projects you're able to tackle and master, and it's a really beautiful thing to see.
Thanks, man.
Where can people find you on the internets, and how can people stay in tune with all of what you're doing?
Yeah, so right now I definitely want to highlight Intellectual because it's coming out April 12th. That's the 12th of April.
It's next Friday.
That's this month.
Yeah.
Next
it's
Friday.
Super soon.
Yeah.
There's some heavy ass music in there. I'm not expecting everybody to understand on the first listen. Take some time, take a breather, listen to something else, come back to it. Cause you're going to get something different from it every time. And, don't just listen to it for your favorite feature on there. cause your favorite song might not have a feature at all. Mm. Ding.
Nice.
And,
And what is it? It's at?
It's at INTLXL for our Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, go follow that shit.
Great. And then you personally, of course, you dropped your old alias when 45 came in.
Mm-hmm.
Did that affect your social media at all? Is it at Nico Segal on?
It is at Nico Segal.
Okay.
It definitely affected a lot of things, just in terms of talking about it, because I had to talk about it so much, and I will continue to forever talk about it so much, which I expected and is okay. But I don't think it necessarily, you know, everybody was super confused, or I hope they weren't.
No, I think confused. It was. I think it was really clear.
I think it was clean.
Yeah, it was great.
It made sense.
It was necessary.
You know, like
even.
Yeah.
I think it was a clean break, and I just changed all my socials. Shout out to Twitter and Instagram, I guess, for letting me do that shit and keeping all my peoples with me. But yeah, I think it only changed kind of people's perception of me, maybe, because I think being from Chicago and coming from such a multicultural family and friend and just community, I think we often don't even think about how the other side perceives our music and our art, and we're only thinking about like impressing our friends or our family. And yeah, I think just, not that you can't really tell from the music, but politically, it definitely was a polarizing decision, and I knew that. And not that I've never been like political on Twitter or said anything political before, because I have, but I think that was just like a super, like, oh, he's just changing his whole identity now, his whole name, all the progress I've built with name recognition and all that shit is just out the window. And I was like, bet, it's just out the window. Like, I don't have another option, you know? And I just felt really strongly about that. And I wanted people to know that I wasn't aligning myself with that message. And, you know, it just brings me to a funny thing that happened to me the other day. I tweeted something that got the most action I've ever gotten on social media ever, of in any place ever. Not Grammys, not tours, not Saturday Night Live videos. All I said was white supremacy equals terrorism. And it got like 20 times. I mean, you can check like 20 times the likes and retweets and all that shit that I've ever gotten on any social media post ever. I think it tells you a lot about, like, we just don't see. And every message, mind you, there's like thousands and thousands of messages, hateful ass messages,
I'm sure,
on this Twitter thread.
Yeah.
Crazy hateful ass messages that you just never even like think of, you know? I wasn't thinking of, I was saying something crazy. That's kind of my point, is like,
it was almost a statement of fact.
We don't even think it's that crazy. We're just like, this how I feel. But like, people really took that,
got the Twitter
finger, went crazy with it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's the temperature of the country.
Yeah.
You know, we live in that kind of deaf antagonism, you know, where we don't even really do the work of listening. We just are ready to fight.
Mm. And hide behind a screen.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
And just like shoot shit off, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But that's why, you know, man, you are a solid dude. And you've been one, you remain one, and so glad that you're back home, and really excited for Intellectual, really excited for the project.
Thank you,
can't wait for people to listen and for us to listen. And thanks for being here, and come back anytime, man. You know, the Corner Store is a home
for
you
me.
Always. Thank you, Nico Segal,
appreciate
man.
That.
Appreciate you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.